Good morning, everyone. We're going to get some economic numbers later this morning. We want to give you a preview, or at least give you a sense of what to watch for when the numbers come out later this morning. Gus Fauché, Director of Macroeconomics at MoodysEconomics.com, joins us from Westchester, Pennsylvania. Andrew Walker, BBC Economics Correspondent, joins us from our partners, the BBC in London. We usually think of GDP as a national number. We're concerned about the U.S. Economic growth number, but there's also, especially in this economy, the issue where China's growth affects other nations' growth, Europe's growth affects other nations' growth. So we really have to look at this as a sort of interactive full picture.
Right. Okay.
And that's kind of what we're going to do this morning.
Right.
Gus, to begin with, what are we expecting out of U.S. economic growth, the GDP figure? It's not going to rise, but is it going to shrink as bad as we've seen?
Well, actually, what we're expecting is we had a report last month that said the GDP contracted 1% at an annual rate in the second quarter. We're actually expecting it to indicate a bigger, slightly bigger contraction in the second quarter, 1.5%. But that's actually good news for the economy, because what that means is that firms have cut back on their inventories, and now in the third quarter, they're going to need to rebuild those inventories. So the bigger the subtraction from inventories in the second quarter, the bigger the positive contributions to inventories in the third and fourth quarters, and the stronger the economy will be.
And all that filters through to jobs, to rehiring, to maybe consumer spending.
Eventually. I mean, you know, what happens is the labor market tends to lag the overall economy. Firms want to make sure that the expansion is actually in place before they start to hire again. The first thing that they do when they see increased demand is they'll work their existing labor forces harder. So we're probably not going to see an improvement in the job market until sometime in early 2010.
Andrew Walker, BBC economics correspondent. When the economy collapsed last year precipitously, and of course it was a slower decline before that point, we could really see where the shrinkage in one country affected another country's economy, and the interdependence of the global economy was really part of the story. As we begin to see a bottom or a slow pickup in economic activity, how is Europe and Asia doing compared to the United States, and how do we see their interaction in some of the numbers that have come out recently?
Well, there certainly have been some encouraging things coming out of some of the large economies in Europe and Asia. China slowed quite a lot. Growth never actually stopped altogether, but it's picked up again a little in the latter part of the year, though you have to say Chinese data are not the most reliable in the world. But Japan and in Europe, France and Germany have all started growing again. The case of Germany and Japan, they had sharper contractions than the US had, and that's probably got something to do with the strong dependence that growth in those two countries has on manufacturing. You know, European and Japanese manufacturers have had to cut back on inventories just like American ones, and that does tend to magnify the magnify the downward phase of the of the cycle. But all three, Germany, France as well, all three have now shown some signs of renewed growth, and they did indeed record positive numbers in the second quarter.
Gus, this is Femi OK in the studio here in New York. How does Europe and Asia growing faster than the US, how does that help or hinder the US's recovery?
Well, certainly I think if we see stronger growth in Europe and Japan, first of all, that's going to be a function of the turnaround in the United States because, as Andrew mentioned, particularly Germany and Japan are big exporters to the U.S., but that also means that they'll have increased demands for imports themselves, either as into the production process or from consumers. So certainly a stronger global economy means a stronger U.S. economy.
And I guess the question that some economists have is, what's real growth versus how well a nation is doing on its own stimulus program? China has a huge stimulus program where it's pumping money into the economy. France certainly uses a lot of public spending to inflate its economy. I don't know so much about Germany and Japan, but is there any way to gauge that?
Well, certainly in the United States, a lot of the growth that we're seeing right now is coming from the stimulus package. The downturn would have been much worse in the second quarter. We're expecting a positive number for the third quarter, but almost all of that is coming from the stimulus. The question is, are the fundamentals of the economy, consumers, the labor market, are they going to improve enough so that when the stimulus is withdrawn sometime in the middle of 2010, will the expansion continue? And that's still an open question.
Andrew, what do you think?
And that has some important implications. implications for the rest of the world, of course, because, I mean, they do have their own stimulus packages, generally not as big as the United States, but in China's case, very significant nonetheless. But to the extent that they are dependent for their growth on exporting to the US, then the phase we get to where the effect, direct effects of the stimulus start to peter out, that's very important for Germany, for Japan, for China. They would need to see some kind of self-sustaining momentum coming from the American consumer. A huge question. And to a degree, it also matters domestically whether when those stimulus packages start to wear out, you know, will local consumers in China, Germany, France, Japan, will they pick up some of the slack? Big open question.
Well, Gus and Andrew, let me get a quick response from both of you on this then. We've been told here in the United States that the stimulus package is hopefully about encouraging jobs in new green industries, that once the stimulus money is gone, it'll be seeded into a whole set of businesses that will grow of their own accord and won't require continued stimulus. Does that ever happen in the traditional stimulus packages, Gus and then Andrew?
Well, I mean, I think that's a secondary benefit. I think that was used to sell the stimulus package. Let's put it this way: I'm not expecting a lot from these technologies. They're gonna rise and fall on their own, once the stimulus is pulled away. I think the important thing is just to get people working again, to get consumers feeling more confident so that they're going out and spending again. And any secondary effects in terms of these green technologies is pretty minor.
Gus Fauché, director of macroeconomics at MoodysEconomy.com. Final thought, Andrew Walker.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I mean, the green technology stuff is not the central focus of all this. And will this all be self-sustaining? I mean, yes, certainly it's been the case in the past that these kind of packages can give a bit of confidence, a bit of renewed momentum. But this time, you know, you have to say in some countries, the US, Britain and others, there's been such a run-up in consumer debt that I suspect people are going to want to start paying debt down for quite some time to come. And that's going to be a significant force holding things back.
Right. Nations of savers. Andrew Walker, BBC economics correspondent, thanks so much.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex. Of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.